All right, so have you ever wondered, like, what happens when a single crime, like, explodes into a whole bunch of different offenses?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Happens all the time.
Like, how do you even begin to figure out the sentencing for something like that?
Yeah, it can get really messy really fast.
Well, today on the Deep Dive, we're going to untangle one of those really messy cases.
Okay.
People v. Perez, a California Supreme Court case that really, like, change the game when it comes to sentencing law in California.
It's a big one for sure. A real landmark case, actually.
Yeah, and to help us break it all down, we have our legal expert here. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
All right, so this case basically dives headfirst into California Penal Code Section 654.
Right, the rule against double punishment.
Exactly. And how it all played out in a particularly, disturbing sexual assault case.
Yeah, this one's from 1979, and it's definitely not for the faint of heart.
Okay, so before we get too deep into the legal weeds, can you kind of set the scene for us? What exactly happened in this case?
All right, so we have Harlow Perez. He was a tenant in an apartment building,
Wow.
and he lured the building manager into his apartment under false pretenses.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And over the next like 45 to 60 minutes, she was subjected to, well, a series of truly horrific acts.
Like what?
We're talking forcible rape, sodomy, two counts of oral copulation,
Wow.
penetration with a foreign object. He stole her jewelry, kidnapped her using her husband's truck, and then assaulted her again.
It's just, wow, it's hard to even hear.
It's a brutal, brutal chain of events.
So obviously this is where Section 654 comes into
All
play.
right, exactly, because the law says you can't punish someone multiple times for what essentially boils down to one act.
Or a series of acts driven by the same intent.
It's a good idea.
So the question becomes, how do you apply that to this case with all these different acts happening?
Well, the trial court initially decided that some of the acts, specifically the sodomy and oral copulation, they kind of stemmed from this single objective,
Of
right?
sexual gratification.
Exactly. So they stayed the sentences for those charges. But the prosecution wasn't happy with that. They appealed, and the case ended up in front of the California Supreme Court.
Okay, so this is where things get really interesting. What was the central question that the Supreme Court had to grapple with?
It all boiled down to whether each of those sexual acts was a distinct, separate crime with its own objective, or were they all just steps towards one big objective, that sexual gratification.
So what did the Supreme Court decide? I mean, how did they justify multiple punishments in such a, seemingly connected series of events?
Okay, so the Supreme Court, they came out pretty strong on this. They basically said, look, this umbrella objective of sexual gratification, it's just too broad.
Oh,
It
interesting.
can't be a get out of jail free card for every single act of violence.
That makes sense. You can't just commit a bunch of crimes and be like, well, it was all for this one overarching goal.
Exactly. The court was worried that letting that fly would basically gut the protections offered by all these different laws.
So what else did the court's ruling focus on?
Well, they made it super clear that different kinds of sexual acts, like rape versus sodomy versus, penetration with a foreign object, those are all fundamentally different violations.
Okay.
Each one is a separate invasion of the victim's body and autonomy.
I see. So it's not just about achieving some general state of gratification.
Right. It's about recognizing the specific harm caused by each distinct act.
So what about the fact that all these acts happened within, what was it, like an hour? Doesn't that suggest a single objective?
Well, the court addressed that too. They basically said, no, just because the acts happened close together in time doesn't mean they're all part of the same objective.
Huh.
What matters is the intent behind each specific act. You have to look at each one individually.
Now, I heard there was a dissenting opinion in this case.
Right, Justice Mosk, he disagreed with the majority.
What was his reasoning?
Well, his main point was that figuring out someone's intent, their objective, that's a question of fact, right? And he thought the trial judge, the one who actually heard all the evidence firsthand, th they were in the best position to make that call.
Okay, so he felt the Supreme Court was stepping on the toes of the trial court.
Kinda, yeah. He thought the majority went too far in reinterpreting what Perez was thinking and doing. He argued that the whole attack, as horrible as it was basically one continuous act with one underlying objective.
So the dissenting view saw it as one continuous, horrifying act, while the majority zeroed in on each separate violation.
Exactly. And for the majority, the fact that there were multiple distinct acts of violence, that made the defendant way more culpable.
Like each act added to the severity of the crime.
Absolutely.
So practically speaking, how did Perez actually change the way we apply Section 654? Like, what's the test now?
Well, the court laid out this three-part test. First, you got to identify all the defendant's objectives.
Okay.
Then figure out if those objectives were independent or just like stepping stones to a single goal. And finally, separate punishments are only okay if the acts were done to achieve those independent objectives.
Right, so you can't double punish for the same goal.
Exactly. And what Perez did was it made crystal clear that when it comes to sexual assault, different types of sex acts, those are different objectives, unless one act is absolutely necessary to do the other.
Okay.
So, like, if someone restrains someone to then assault them, that's one objective. But if they commit different types of assault, that's multiple objectives.
Got it. Now, Perez was also convicted of robbery and kidnapping, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did the court deal with those charges?
Yeah, so the robbery, that was the theft of her jewelry.
Right.
And the kidnapping was using her husband's truck. The court saw those as separate from the sex crimes. The appeals were mainly about the sex offenses, you know, whether those multiple acts could be punished separately.
So the robbery and kidnapping, those were already being treated as separate units of sentencing.
Exactly. The Perez ruling really zoomed in on how we deal with multiple sex acts in one incident.
It seems like the court was really trying to send a message with this decision.
Oh, yeah. They basically said that someone who commits a bunch of crimes to get sexual gratification, they're much more culpable than someone who commits just one act.
So no volume discounts for being extra violent, huh?
Nope. Each act is a separate wrong, each with its own consequences.
So how does this affect lawyers today? Like, what are the implications for prosecutors and defense attorneys?
Well, for prosecutors, this case is a huge win. It gives them a much stronger argument for consecutive sentences when there are multiple sex acts involved.
Right. They can point to Perez and say, look, each of these is a separate crime, so each deserves a separate punishment.
Exactly. But for defense attorneys, it's a tougher road. They've got to work harder to show that the acts were so intertwined that they were really part of one objective.
So they have to argue that the acts were either simultaneous or that one act was absolutely necessary for the other one to happen.
Yeah, basically. It's a lot harder now to argue that a bunch of different sexual assaults were all just part of one big plan.
Got it. There was also this procedural thing about the trial court changing its mind on the sentencing, right?
Yeah. So initially, the trial court gave concurrent sentences for some of the crimes, but then the prosecution objected and the court changed it to consecutive sentences.
Oh, okay.
And the Supreme Court upheld that. Basically, they said that trial courts have the power to fix sentencing errors until the appeals process is completely over.
So even after the initial judgment, the trial court can still make changes if they need to.
Exactly. That's a pretty important takeaway for lawyers.
Were there any loose ends after the Perez decision? Like, were there any questions it didn't fully answer?
Yeah, there were a couple. The court didn't actually decide if the evidence for the great bodily injury finding was enough because they were sending the case back to the trial court for resentencing anyway.
Okay.
And more importantly, the court didn't say whether different types of penetration, like with fingers versus with, something else, whether those would always count as different objectives.
So that's an area where the law is still a bit murky.
Exactly. It'll probably take another case to iron that out.
Okay, so let's recap the key takeaways from People v. Perez.
All right, so first off, the California Supreme Court said no way to this umbrella objective of sexual gratification.
Right, you can't just lump all these terrible acts under one umbrella.
Nope. Each act has to be considered on its own. And Perez also clarified the test for applying Section 654, that three-part test we talked about.
Identify the objectives, see if they're independent, and then decide if separate punishments are appropriate.
Exactly. And a super important point, the court said different kinds of sexual acts are different objectives unless one is directly necessary for the other.
So that's a big deal for cases with multiple sex offenses.
Huge. And another key thing, the court made it clear that committing multiple acts to get sexual gratification, that makes someone way more culpable.
No bulk discounts on sexual assault, basically.
Right. The Perez ruling also made it easier for prosecutors to argue for consecutive sentences, while making it tougher for defense attorneys to use Section 654 as a shield. And we saw how trial courts still have some flexibility to tweak sentences, even after the initial judgment.
But we also saw that Perez left a few questions unanswered. particularly about different types of penetration.
Right. Those are still open questions for future courts to grapple with.
Okay, so zooming out a bit, what does Perez tell us about criminal law in general?
I think it really highlights how crucial it is to understand a defendant's intent, their objectives, in each specific act. And it shows the careful balance between preventing excessive punishment and making sure the punishment fits the crime.
So it's a balancing act between fairness to the defendant and justice for the victim.
Exactly. And Perez also forces us to confront some uncomfortable questions about how we punish sexual violence. Like, how do we make sure the punishment truly reflects the harm caused by each individual act?
That's a tough question. So for all you law students out there, think about this. How does People v. Perez affect the strategies lawyers use in sexual assault cases today? Does this precedent give us enough clarity about separating criminal objectives? Or are there still gray areas that need to be addressed by the courts or maybe even by lawmakers? This deep dive into People v. Perez has given you a solid foundation in a very complex area of law, but there's always more to learn. Keep exploring Section 654 and how it's been used in other cases. Trust me, mastering this stuff is crucial if you want to be a successful criminal lawyer.
And remember, every case is different and the facts always matter. So don't just memorize the rules, learn how to apply them in real-world situations.
Great advice. Thanks for breaking it all down for us.
Anytime.
And that's it for this deep dive into People v. Perez. Until next time.